The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Sadly, journalism has changed a lot since I first stepped into a newsroom. And I'll be honest, I don't like the direction it's going. The media needs more balance in coverage and a wider range of viewpoints represented in every newsroom, at every level, and in each position. In the past few years, I haven't felt proud to be a member of the media. I'm sure there are other journalists out there who feel the same way. I found myself reading news copy that I didn't believe was fully truthful or only told part of the story. And I began to feel that I was contributing to the fear and division in this country by continuing on in this profession. It's been a serious struggle for me, and I no longer want to do this job anymore. So I've decided the time is right to do something else, and I'm leaving Fox 10. As I close this chapter of my career, there will probably be some hit pieces written about me. Not everyone is dedicated to telling the truth, but thankfully many of you have figured that out. I promise you, if you hear it from my lips, it will be truthful.
That was Carrie Lake in March of 2021, walking away from a career, 3 decades, working as a broadcaster there in Phoenix, Arizona. And today, we have her live in the studio, and we're so happy to have you here.
I am ecstatic. We just came into the campus here, and the beautiful warm welcome with the students lined up on the road. Such a beautiful place here, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, I know you're very busy, and we're happy for you to make some time for us. That video you saw there, March of 2021, mm-hmm. as I was telling you in the ride up here, it seems like forever ago now because so much has happened in your life since.
You actually just took me back in time, and I remember what I was thinking at that time, which was I was scared. I was walking away from a 3-decade career that I had worked so hard to work my way up to the top in. I walked away from a 7-figure contract, but I just felt so disillusioned and disappointed in where the profession had gone that I felt that was my only choice. Wow. And now I look back and I think that seems like 2 lifetimes ago.
Yeah.
Because so much has happened since then that I would have never predicted in my wildest dreams.
Yeah, 2.5 years. Well, on this program, just to kind of familiarize yourself with what we talk about a lot, we talk about the corrupt regime media, okay?
Yep.
We talk about all the corruption in the swamp and government and that sort of thing. And we emphasize stolen elections a lot. So I have a feeling this discussion is going to be right in your wheelhouse.
You mean we can talk about elections here, the taboo subject?
That's
you think
right.
of all of the things that people are talking about now,
yeah.
you know, even when you think about in our government-run schools, really inappropriate things our children are being exposed to. And that's, you can talk about all that, but you can't talk about corruption in our elections. You can't talk about corruption in the government.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I thought that was our duty as citizens
yeah.
of this great republic to yeah. actually call out corruption when we see it.
Yeah.
And if we don't get honest elections and we don't get them in a hurry, I really worry about the future of this country if we can survive.
Yeah. Well, just to dial back to the clip there at the beginning, you said in your book, this just came out this summer, right? Unafraid?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of it, too. I'm glad that you yeah. Have a copy and you read it. That's awesome.
It's fantastic, yeah. You said that when you walked away from the Fox affiliate that you felt uncaged and liberated. What do you mean by uncaged? And now you can just speak your mind.
Well, at first, when I remember doing that video, and I had just come home from a trip looking at colleges with my daughter, and my husband is a video production company. So I said, I want to say goodbye to the people. I was in their homes for 27 years. And I didn't really know what my next step was. I had kind of a rough idea. I was going to go work and do some media training. And so I did feel a little shaky, like, what am I going to do next? And I know I'm looking forward to actually living a life out of the public spotlight. That was what I was thinking. Right. Little did I know the spotlight would be shining on me a lot harsher and bigger than I ever imagined. But I was ready to just kind of walk away and go do, kind of live a normal life instead of being in the public eye for so long. And little did I know that I would end up somehow in the middle of the political world, in the middle of a political movement as a candidate for office. I mean, but this is what happens when you hand your life over to God. And I talk about it in the book. I mean, I always have been a woman of faith, a child of faith. I went to Sunday school as a kid. But I'm going to be honest, I was one of those people who I leaned on God when times were rough.
Right.
Okay, God, help me through this. Please, I need a little bit of help right now. And then when things started going well, I took all the credit for it and said, okay, I'm fine. God, I got this. You can just sit back and let me handle it now. And when I walked away and during COVID, I really, really became much closer to my faith and handed my life over to God 100%.
Yeah.
And God's plans are so much bigger than whatever we can come up with.
You said you had flipped the Bible open at one when you were really debating on, should I leave this lucrative contract behind and just move on? I think it was 1 Timothy 6:7 where it says you brought nothing into the world, you're going to take nothing out, and you just said, okay, that's
As a matter of fact, I think the first page of the book, I think I know it's the first or second page, I put that. That is such an important Bible verse for me because when I was making that decision to leave, it's scary to walk away from what you know how to do. And I was praying and I said, God, I'm hung up on walking away from this money. Am I going to look back at this with regret? Am I going to look back 6 months, a year and say, that was the stupidest thing you ever did. Who walks away from that kind of money? Who walks away from that lifestyle? And it was at that moment I was praying and I grabbed the Bible. I just opened it up to a random page, dropped my finger down. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 7. For you bring nothing into this world and it is certain you will take nothing out.
Right.
And I mean, to me, that was almost, the earth almost moved under my feet. I said, okay, I got the message loud and clear, God. I'm leaving.
Pretty amazing.
So, yeah.
Back to I know COVID was a real eye-opener because you were still in the business.
Yep.
You saw the scaremongering. You knew that they weren't telling the whole story. I mean, you didn't know the whole story. None of us did. But you knew that they were leaving a lot of details out. But were there, like, indications before COVID even where you started to see this whole industry is just corrupt more than I ever imagined it would be?
Well, I mean, I always knew that the media was biased to the left. But I felt that with the power and the, and I don't want to say power, with the influence I had in the newsroom, I could push for stories that were more balanced. And being the last line of defense, the anchor who's reading the news, if something came across, you know, my scripts that was very biased, I could adjust it. But during COVID, I found it really hard to do that. We were constantly putting the death numbers and the hospitals are full and there's no more room in the hospitals and you got to stay home and don't go visit grandma. Just zoom in and make a phone call, but don't have any contact with, you know, your loved ones and don't celebrate Thanksgiving together. It was just pushing fear constantly. And I could not push back against it anymore.
Right.
I would try to get stories about people who had COVID and recovered. And there wasn't really an interest in that. It was only the worst case scenario story when the whole family was wiped out. And I feel terrible when somebody lost their lives to COVID. But you asked me about being free and unchained. The tape had been taken off and I could finally speak. It wasn't immediately after I left that I felt that freedom. It was only about a few months later when I decided to run for office, which was never in my wildest dream. As a matter of fact, I always said I would never run for office because who would put themselves through that? And then when I walked away, the people reached out and said, would you please run for office? That became in the hundreds and thousands of messages and DMs and calls that I got. What people would stop me when I'd be walking with my husband, taking an evening stroll. Cars would pull over and go, would you please run for office? We need someone we trust. You understand us. We trust you. You know the issues. You've been covering them. And at first I kind of laughed and thought, well, they must really hate me because I just walked away from the corrupt world of news and now they want me to go into the even more corrupt world of politics? No, thank you. But I got to thinking, this is kind of what our founding fathers envisioned, real citizens stepping forward, whether it be, way back when, the merchant, the farmer, stepping away, going to represent the people in his community, and then coming back home.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, Ronald Reagan talked about being a citizen politician. Why not me? I will jump in.
Right.
And it was only when I started speaking out as a political candidate that I realized how much I had been holding in of my viewpoint. Because as a journalist, you're not supposed to share your viewpoints. You're supposed to keep those.
Right.
If you're a good journalist, nowadays, you know, if you're on the left, you can say whatever you want. If you're conservative, you have to keep it quiet.
Right.
So I remember doing an interview, and as a matter of fact, it was with Steve Bannon, and I thought it went really well. And I finished the interview, and I got a text from Steve, and he said, "How do you think that went?" I go, I think it went okay. What do you think?" He goes, "Do you want to know what I think?" And then I went, "Uh-oh." And I said, "Sure, of course I do." And he called me, and he said, "That was terrible." And I said, "Oh my gosh, what do you mean that was terrible? I mean, I think I got the sentences out. I didn't, you know, start sweating. I didn't melt down." He goes, "It was fine if I'm interviewing a journalist." But he said, "You're not a journalist anymore. You are a candidate for office.
Yeah.
And you better start talking about where you stand on things.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're partisan now." And that, to me, was like a wake-up call. I went, he's right. I have to express where I stand on these issues boldly, because I can't keep trying to just
right.
please everybody like you try to do as a journalist.
Right.
And it was at that moment that I thought about it for a few days. I said, I really have to start getting very, very specific with where I stand on the issues.
Yeah.
And I did. It was freeing.
That makes me think of the section where you talk about how in going into your campaign, you wanted to kind of associate with media that was more favorable, maybe some of the alternative media sources, and stay away from the left-wing media that's so pervasive across the landscape. So that went on for a while, and you said you had some advisors saying, well, you're going to have to deal with the mainstream at some point. So you did. It was a super contentious interview. You went away just kind of, you know, all in a huff and a puff, thinking it went disastrously. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're getting this feedback that, hey, that's going viral and people are cheering you on. So tell me about that experience.
Yeah, well, you know, because I was so disillusioned with the media, the mainstream media, the legacy media, whatever you want to call it. I worked in it for 30 years. I just realized that it was all going to be negative. And I said to the team, I'm not going to do any interviews with that media. We're icing them out. Why would I talk to them when it's just going to be a hit piece after hit piece? And the team was like, "Carrie, you got to do interviews with the fake news, you know, at some point." And I said, "No, we don't. We can do alternative media. We can do independent journalists. We can use our social media to get our message out. But why would we go in and talk to these people?" And then one day, my communications director talked me into doing just a 5-minute interview with the local political reporter. And I said, "All right, 5 minutes, I'll do it." And this is like shortly after I decided to jump in. I mean, there's a million questions you can ask. I came from the news. You could sit me down and say, you left the news and now you're going into politics. How did you get from here to there? What was your thought process? Mm-hmm. No, it was none of that. It was immediately, very first question, just attack, attack, attack. And I sat there in my home studio. We were doing this via Zoom. And I felt myself getting so angry. Like, I felt there might be steam and smoke coming out of my ears. I was just enraged. I felt my blood pressure going up. You know that feeling when you're just so upset? I'm like, I knew this guy was not going to be fair. Oh, I'm so mad. I'm answering the questions. It goes on. 5 minutes passes. He keeps going. I finally said, you know what? I've given you more time than I promised. And this is your last question. And we wrapped it up, hung up, or not, you know, turned off the Zoom call. And I called the team and I said, that was the biggest mistake. I completely lost my cool. This is going to be a disaster when this gets out. They're going to do a hit piece. And as I'm talking to Ross, he goes, it went that bad? I go, yes, it went that bad. I was like out of my mind, enraged. And as we're talking on the phone, my husband's in the background rewinding and listening to it. And he pulls his headphones off and he goes, I don't know what you're talking about. This is genius. This is so good. You just dismantled him. You completely, you know, showed him who's boss. And so we decided to put it out right away because we knew that he would take that interview where right. he did not look good and he would cut all of the parts out of it. This is what the media does. They cut all the parts where they're being a jerk out and then they edit it to make you look like you're out of control.
Right.
And that's what they put out. So I said, okay, we're going to put this out and we are going to put the whole thing out unedited so that the people can see when they go to watch his little piece he's going to put on at 5 p.m., they can see how he cuts it up to make himself look good.
Yeah.
And it went viral immediately. Even people who were voting for one of my opponents in the Republican, primary at that time were like, wow, you did a great job. You put that guy in his place. He needed that. And thank God you did that. And what I realized is that even though I was angry on the inside, I had this ability to keep my cool on the outside.
Right.
And keep my composure and make my points. And at that moment, we realized, oh, not only are we going to switch out, my idea was bad, we are going to do as much fake news media as we can. So we were like, bring it, come on.
You're right into the belly of the beast after that. But but then there's all, you also said that because they were so dishonest and they would cut it in pieces, as you pointed out, that you would then bring along your husband who would then capture the full length interview and just to try to keep them honest. And that did have a positive effect on even how they treated you going down the stretch.
Yes, and I recommend every politician out there, especially if you are conservative, always get a mic on. They're not that expensive, and have somebody record.
Yeah.
You know, the thing we did was with a microphone, and it was clear and you could hear it. It wasn't like taken from across the room.
Right.
So we always made it very clear, and we would tell them, look, I'm going to answer any question that you want to ask me, and I'm hoping that you'll be honest. And if not, we're going to put this out.
Yeah.
If it's an honest interview, we don't need to put it out. But if it's dishonest, it's going to go out, and it will go viral.
Yeah.
And so pretty soon, they stopped asking the loaded questions, the nasty questions. By the time the campaign wrapped up, you know, it started off with just the worst, most loaded, biased questions you could ever imagine. And I would call them out. I would say that question in and of itself shows your bias. You can tell by the way you asked it. You would never ask a liberal that. You know, I would call them out as we were doing these press conferences. By the time the campaign rolled around, we had literally dozens of media covering us from all over the world. And they weren't asking questions that way anymore.
Yeah.
So I felt very proud that I kind of helped retrain the media on how to ask appropriate journalistic questions. And you know, sometimes they would cut it and twist it and make it pretty ugly, because I did find out that 100% of the news coverage on me was negative.
Yeah.
And now I can't get the fake news to even interview me because they're afraid. They know that when they try their tricks that I will call them out on it.
Well, that approach, as you know, is very Trumpian. You said in the book, and it's totally true, the two, like the must-watch TV, going back to the debates, any debate with Donald Trump. And then after that, you said the must-watch press briefings, if it's in the White House press room, is with Donald Trump. And when I read that, I was just thinking, there is not a press briefing I would ever sit down and watch in its entirety. When Trump was in there, I did it quite often. And then the debates, as you know, I mean, there was fireworks there.
That's
then
right.
They had the one just recently without him, and, you know, people don't watch it. There's not near as big of an audience.
Yeah, so. He wasn't there, but he was looming large.
Yeah, that's right. He won the debate, but he wasn't even there. Right. So speaking of Trump and Obama, I think what the question that kind of set you off in that contentious interview was who your family supposedly donated to what funds or whatever. But speaking of Obama, just as another personality that really is working against everything that Trump stands for, this is from your book on page 83. It says Barack Obama was a was a race baiting, weak politician who spent the duration of two miserable terms apologizing for America's mistakes on the world stage.
Right.
And relentlessly demonizing Americans as bitter clingers who held on to their Bibles and guns. He stoked racial tension for political gain, which he had an opportunity to heal. So from your perspective, being in media, in broadcasting for three decades, I mean, everything you said there is, it's pretty obvious that's what he represented. But what's your take on how the media, from 2008, or I guess 2007, when he came on the scene, what's your take on how the legacy media, the corporate media, treated him or vetted him or didn't vet him?
Didn't vet him. And we're learning a lot more. I mean, a lot of things are starting to come out about Obama that the media knew about. I didn't know about a lot of that, but the media knew about and didn't cover.
Right.
And I'm hearing, because I saw the Tucker interview, that, and I'm not going to go into all the sordid details that we're learning about Obama's past that were kept from the public because of a media that was really more of a lapdog than an attack dog. And I'm not saying you have to be an attack dog, but there's a new guy on the scene that no one's heard about.
Right.
And no questions were asked of him. And you know, and like I said, and I talk about it in the book, we did support him because we were looking at having two little babies. I've got, my kids are a year and a half apart. I had two babies on either hip. And we were looking at that race going, who's going to end these endless wars? Right. Who's going to start the wars? And it was Obama versus McCain. And I talk about John McCain in the book because I covered him for decades as a journalist in Arizona. I knew that he was a warmonger. Mm-hmm. He's never met a war or conflict he didn't want to throw money into and throw our sons and daughters off to fight. And so we took a gamble. We didn't have a lot of good choices. But what a disappointment. Yeah. I covered him as well. I was given an exclusive interview, and I laugh because if you ever see the picture of me online, it's all over, standing next to Obama smiling. It was taken from the White House when I was given an exclusive interview with him.
Right.
And the media and some of the trolls online are so dishonest, they actually cut the picture of my producer out of it. So here we are at the White House, my producer, me, and Obama, after I was given an exclusive interview, which, you know, as a journalist, that's a pretty cool thing to go interview a sitting president.
For sure, yeah.
I probably asked him more tough questions than anybody because he never did any interviews. The media just, everything he did, you know, the toughest questions they would ask him was, what's been the most interesting thing about being president? I mean, can you imagine these softball questions they threw at him?
Right.
So I went and interviewed him. And then a year later, I found myself back in the White House doing a story on an Arizona woman who was working in the White House. But I was right there in the pool, the press pool.
Right.
1 year later, almost to the date when the Russiagate story broke.
So you interview Barack Obama in 2016, last year of his presidency.
Yes, in May.
And you were in the press pool then too, right?
And we were watching as the press just, you know, gushing and, oh, yeah. Obama, you know.
Michael Hastings, the late Michael Hastings, he says they swooned before
they
Obama.
They swooned. And he never even showed up. I mean, these people covered him for 8 years. And he would never give him interviews. Trump gave interviews every day.
Right.
He, you know, was open book. And then we were there 1 year later, almost to the date. And this was the most hostile. My photographer and I looked at each other and went, can you believe your eyes? This is like the same press, but just they had their daggers out. We were overhearing some of the tech
because
people.
Of Trump.
Talking about how much they couldn't stand Trump. Right, they hated this guy. And I'm like, wow, you're supposed to keep that inside. So the media handled Obama. They never asked the tough questions on Obama. And then they went the opposite with Trump. We've been watching an 8-year smear campaign with President Trump. Mm-hmm. It saddens me because here's a guy who gave up so much, a beautiful life. He didn't need to do this. He loves our country. He wants to save this great republic. And he has been victim of an 8-year smear campaign by the fake news media.
Right.
I tell people, if you don't like this man, and I don't blame the people. If people don't like Trump, they've fallen victim of a brainwashing scheme by the fake news media, who is just as guilty as the swamp mm-hmm. in trying to tear down our country. I do believe they are the enemy of the people. Who controls the information? Who controls the information controls our minds.
Yeah.
And that's why we need to pull back and turn off the fake news, because it's really disgusting.
Yeah.
Obama has been was such a disappointment.
Right.
He stoked racial hatred, not even hatred. He stoked, I don't believe there was that racial hatred. He tries to act like America's a racist country. America's the least racist country. And he stoked that to try to get votes and to push fear.
Yeah.
And he had such an ability, if he would have wanted to bring America together, and he squandered that. And now we're learning more and more and more about him and his involvement behind spying on President Trump when he was a candidate and in his early months.
Well, yeah, you mentioned Russiagate, and of course it came out from the Hillary campaign. I mean, the content of it, but it was launched against Trump, you know, the smear campaign, as you say. When Obama was in office, I mean, he unleashed all those alphabet agencies to target Donald Trump to spy on him and that sort of thing.
I'm starting to figure out why, because there was so much criminality going on in that White House between Biden and probably Obama and Clinton. I'm figuring out why. They were trying to keep the spotlight off of their crimes by making up crimes and accusing Trump of it.
Right.
And what happens with a news story, especially when the media is in on it, it goes around the globe over and over. They talked about Russiagate for 3 years. They dragged this good country and the good people of our country through hell for 3 years with Russiagate. And it was a lie.
Yeah.
And they did that to slow President Trump, slow his agenda, and try to destroy him.
Yeah.
But there's enough people with common sense who realize what was going on.
Yeah.
And I think that group is growing. And I believe Trump will win in a landslide.
We had General Michael Flynn here 3 weeks ago, and he said that he felt like on January 5th, 2017, you know, 2 weeks before Donald Trump's inaugurated, that that's when the official start date of the coup against Donald Trump and America's government, or, you know, who they elected as president. And then he said that going through now, fast forward into 2023, we're still in the throes of the coup. I mean, would you go so far as to say that this from the beginning was a coup attempt by Barack Obama?
You could call it that. I mean, an insurrection, really, when they were trying to thwart the will of the people. I believe we're at the late stages of a Marxist takeover of our country. And we're in the last battles of this war. This is a war not being fought with bullets, but there is a war that's happening against our republic. And I think that's a fair assessment. I think there was a coup when they stole our election in Arizona. There was a coup and a takeover of our state government. The people, the people's will was taken from them when they rigged an election.
Right.
And they installed people in our state government who were not duly elected. And this is why I continue to fight every day. And I don't care what the fake news says about me. God knows who I am. I'm good with God. I'm good with my family and my loved ones. And I think when I meet people and have an opportunity to have a connection with people, they realize that, oh my goodness, everything the fake news has said about this woman is false. But they have to paint me in that light. Because if they start telling the truth, their days are numbered. People will go, well, you guys have been lying. You guys have been part of the problem. And I believe that the truth will come out faster. The truth will eventually come out, though.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how quickly.
Yeah.
And if we can do it, if we can get it out there before our country is history.
Yeah, and you're still fighting, as you said, coming up here in several lawsuits. In fact, I don't get it too much into the legal fighting, but you continue in this fight. And as you said, the truth will prevail in the end.
Like it did with all those cases and all those lies they said about Trump.
Yeah.
The media lies months and months, but the truth eventually comes out. Unfortunately, the truth doesn't get the coverage that the lie did, which is why there's been so much damage to President Trump's reputation. But I think the majority of people actually are ready to vote for President Trump again.
Yeah. Just give us a tiny snapshot of, you have a hearing in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals today, like it's an hour after this show ends, I believe.
Yes, indeed.
And it's basically, well, I'll let you
7 months before the election, and this is, you almost want to laugh because it's so ridiculous. 7 months before that election in Arizona, where if you were watching it, you realized it was sabotaged. Election Day was sabotaged. 7 months before that, we went to the federal court, asked for injunctive relief to get rid of these voting machines because they're not reliable. They're not accurate. The components are made by our enemies, the CCP and China and other countries. And they're easily manipulated. And we had proof of all of that. And an Obama judge dismissed the case, threw it out. And 7 months later, lo and behold, our election hits and 60% of the machines failed. 60%.
Chaos.
59 point something. So 60%. And those failing machines were rolled out and put in Republican voting areas. And the lines were 2 and 3 and 4, even 6 hour lines on election day when 75 or more percent of the people who showed up were voting for me. This was an intent. It was done with intent. It was done to change the results of the election. It was done to disenfranchise voters. And so we believe going into the case today that we can say, well, you threw it out, you didn't give us an injunctive relief, and look what happened. These machines failed in just an epic way. So that's one case. We also have our original case, which is going to the appellate court in Arizona. That's our original election fraud case, our election case lawsuit. And then we have another case where we're trying to get a hold of the ballot envelopes that people mail their mail-in ballots in to show that there's no signatures on these, or there's mismatched signatures. So we have a lot of different things that are happening. I'm also being sued by a government official, an election official, a politician, for defamation, for speaking out about this botched election. They don't want us speaking about it, and I will never be quiet when it comes to this because I believe this is the issue of our time, and our elections are theater. If we don't have honest elections, they're just theater to make us feel good about things, and I want to make sure that everybody's vote counts, whether they are the most liberal Democrat or the most conservative Republican or somewhere in between. One legal vote per legal voter.
Right.
We know the winner on election night, not 2 weeks later. We don't vote for a month and count for 2 weeks, which is how they're doing it right now in Arizona.
Yeah, it's telling, isn't it, when the radical left tries to blot out a message, when they don't want it to get a voice.
When they indict you for asking questions or bringing out the corruption in the election, when they're indicting you for asking questions about elections, that means there's problems with elections.
Right. Yeah, I think it was Tucker recently who said that you can go on TV and say that the earth is flat and people will say, oh, right, and then move on and not do anything. But if you go on and say, was that election stolen or rigged? I mean, what is it? Was it above board?
Yeah.
They go after you.
They go after you.
And they put you in jail.
And they censor you.
Yeah.
The censorship is just outrageous. Our First Amendment is under assault. Second Amendment's under assault. So, but the good news is, and I don't want to, I want people to realize that we have so much power as we the people of this country. And every day I wake up, I mean, you can choose how your attitude every day. And I pray and I just say, use me today, God, however you see fit, and guide us and give us discernment and give us the strength that we need to get through these difficult times. I believe that we were placed here at this time for a reason. Just as our founding fathers were placed back in the 13 colonies, 247 years ago. For a reason. This is providential. This is a critical moment, not just in American history, in human history, and that God placed us here means that He put us here because we are the people to get us through this time. And just as you could, Moses was reluctant when God called him up to lead. We all have that reluctance, but we need to shed the reluctance, step into the moment that we have been placed here for, and speak out, use our most powerful voice, our weapon, which is our voice. Speak the truth right now. Talk about elections. If you support President Trump, which I hope you do, speak out about it. Let everyone know. No more hiding behind, oh, I don't want to ruffle feathers. We got to ruffle a few feathers because we need to let them know we are the majority, the people who want to save this country. And when we come together, there's no stopping us. This is how we bring our country back.
What was it you said recently about Donald Trump, just his leadership overall, and I think either one of the greatest presidents ever, or
I think he is. I mean, yeah. I think he's the most consequential president.
Yeah.
George Washington was pretty awesome, but I think President Trump is going to be the president that saves the republic.
Yeah.
Because we're on the verge of losing it,
right.
And I'm not the only one. And I believe besides that, he is also one of the most consequential leaders in human history. I'm putting him up there with that. And I know people think, oh, you're just a Trump fan. Yeah, I am a Trump fan. I'm a mother who's really worried about the future for my children. I'm going to be selfish here. I'm worried about my son and daughter's future and everybody else's as well. And I love President Trump because I know him personally now. I've become friends with him. But aside from that, I love his love for this country. I love his patriotism. I love his willingness to step out of his comfortable life into the firing, into the firing squad practically, and take the incoming every day, speak the truth, and be willing to get in there and fight for us.
Yeah, he has courage. You said on page 123, it wasn't just the art of the deal that Donald Trump had mastered, but the art of war. He's a fighter. He's a fighter, and that goes to what you were just saying about, now's the time to make a stand and fight for the truth and fight for what's right.
The Art of War is a great book if you haven't read it. I highly recommend it, and I think in some ways I see how he strategizes, and I do believe he probably has read that book.
Right. You say on page 103, the deep state conspired with the media to keep the fear of COVID in an attempt to oust Donald Trump from the White House and gain more control of American lives and to finally usher in their globalist agenda. And then also in the book, you talk about how globalism is just a fancy term for communism. So, I mean, essentially what you're saying, going back to the coup or the insurrection or whatever, it's a communist attack against the United States of America.
Globalism and Marxism or communist leads us down the same road. We lose our freedoms. We lose our ability to live life with the liberties that we have. It's power from the top being forced down on us.
Right.
We lose everything, what it means to be an American. And that's what they're pushing. It's the uniparty. It's Republicans and Democrats. The Democrats are more pushing the Marxist side of it. The Republicans on the uniparty are pushing the globalist side. And I think that COVID was a way to a tectonic shift,
right,
to completely shake the world up, destroy economies, destroy what was left of the middle class, destroy privately owned small businesses, pump up the corporate businesses, and let them start their reset. They can't have that reset with President Trump, so that was a big part of it too, which is the overthrow of our government mm-hmm. by stealing an election.
Right.
Because we the people wanted President Trump. He won a massive victory. He won 12 million more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016. That's huge. If he would have just won what he won in 2016, he would have won.
Right.
And it was
so
such
a
massive it was such a massive victory. It's comical that they want us to believe that Joe Biden got 81 million votes. First of all, you don't only win 16% of the counties, and those were very questionable wins, especially in Fulton County and places in Michigan and Milwaukee and Wisconsin and Maricopa County. So he wins 16% of the counties, yet he gets 81 million votes, the most votes in the history of this great country, more than Obama got.
Right.
This is crazy. They're asking us to check our logic, to check our common sense, to set aside our intelligence and believe these outrageous lies. These are like the kind of crazy lies, like the moon is made of cheese lies. You know, this is how insane it is. And then they gaslight us and they make us feel bad if we even say, wait a minute, but we saw what happened on Election Day in Maricopa County. That there's no way that he won Maricopa County. And so I just speak out about it because we've got a lot to lose here. People say, well, why are you, just calm down and sit back and try to win, run again. I go, no, it's going to ruin your political future. I don't care about a political future. I really don't. I'm not in this for a political future. I'm in this to help save our country. And frankly, I'd like to get back to my normal life. I want to go. I've had offers to do media. I have had many, many offers. And this is not the season for making a fortune. This is the season for saving our country. And so I'm going to stay in this arena. I'm going to stay in this and help fight because I think we have 1 year to really try to save this republic, the United States of America.
Wow. Coming back to the COVID component to the election steal, this is from your book again. It says one of it's a tweet Charlie Kirkson. He's from Phoenix.
He's great. Yes, Charlie. Okay. He's got Turning Point, which I highly recommend. If you're young out there, start a Turning Point chapter at your school or join one. They're helping to kind of fix some of the indoctrination that has been lobbed at our children in these schools, this leftist indoctrination.
He tweeted yesterday, it would have been much better had we done nothing in 2020. No lockdowns, no masks, no school closures, no stimulus, no vax mandates. The damage COVID did to our society was minimal. The damage our response to COVID did was cataclysmic.
That is absolutely correct. Cataclysmic is a perfect word. If you just take what it did to our children, and this is where I get a lump in my throat. Really, this is one of the reasons I decided to run, because as a mother watching as our children were being masked, I always told my kids, don't wear the masks, and whatever trouble you face, I will back you up. But they're like, Mom, if we want to do this, we have to have our mask on. I'm like, I will help you push back on that. But what they did, masking our children, taking school away, what we've lost in education to our children, I think of the fun I was having my high school and college years, and this young group of people, what was taken from our young people at the hands of our government is unforgivable. Absolutely unforgivable. You don't get those days back. You don't get those memories back. They couldn't walk, do the graduation. They missed out on prom. They missed out on a first date. They couldn't kiss the boy. They couldn't have weddings. They couldn't experience those wonderful moments of their youth. And they should be livid. And that's why we had so many young people in our movement. These young people were like, we've got to get involved in politics because if we don't, someone else is going to chart the course for our future and it's not going to be good. And so it is cataclysmic what happened to just our children. And then you think about the vax mandates and people who lost their jobs because they didn't want to get it. What happened to our economy? What happened to the world economy? Poor countries. I don't know how we totally recover. But these people who say, oh, we just need to forget that. No. You don't forgive until there's been justice. And we will seek justice for what happened in COVID. We can't just move on from these things without justice. And we're not getting justice for any of it right now because our Justice Department is controlled by somebody who was selected for office, not elected, and is now weaponizing our own government against us. So this is why we gotta fight like our hair's on fire, people.
We had an article back in June of 2020. So this is peak COVID hysteria. and we titled it "The Cure Is Killing Us." I mean, I remember how stressful it was just to put that together because everything was shut down, all these mask mandates, and you know, you had conflicting information, some information that wasn't getting out there. But we were looking at our world, thinking, this is not the way God deals with disease. You know, to have people that are perfectly healthy shut down their business, you know,
isolate.
Wear a mask everywhere, isolating. But yeah, it turns out like 3 years on,
nobody got to see that because of the censorship.
Yeah,
you know,
probably there was
so much good information that was attempted to get out, but they were censoring us. And now we're learning the government was part of that censorship.
Right.
They were looking for keywords, censoring if you talked about elections, censoring if you talked about ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine,
yeah.
Shutting down your account even in many cases. It's the government's attempt to keep good information that could have helped end this nonsense from the people is just shocking.
You wrote this, one of the consequences of COVID hysteria and the government making it almost impossible for you to leave your house was the introduction of mass mail-in balloting to our election system. So tell me how COVID, the hysteria, ties in with the way they stole
the
election.
That was all part of it. That truly was all part of it. They had to defeat President Trump because their globalist agenda was not going to work with President Trump in the White House. He's not going to let America turn into some globalist blob that, you know, Klaus Schwab is in charge of and George Soros. And they had to defeat him. And yet they looked at where the country was going, the prosperity in this country. Trump lowered taxes. He brought peace to the Middle East. The Abraham Accords 3 years ago, I believe today or tomorrow, this week, he brought peace to the Middle East. We were told that wasn't even possible. He ended ISIS. He was starting to end all the wars. He didn't start any new wars. We had a record economy. Every class of citizen was doing better. Unemployment, record low unemployment. The best economy in my life, and I've been around for a while, and things were going so well. And they knew that they couldn't defeat him with just the lies that the fake news was pumping out. They had to create something where they did mass mail-in ballots.
Yeah.
And those ballots are going to everyone. We had one address in, I think it was the Liz Harris report, where there were 75 people registered to a dirt lot in Maricopa County. They were getting through their NGOs, they were signing up and registering people to vote, people who probably don't even exist. And you know, it really is still a problem now because those people are still on the voter rolls.
Yeah.
And they're still using that. What they do is they mail them out. They mail all these ballots out. The ones that get sent back, they're gathering up and filling out.
Right.
It is the most corrupt thing ever. And
ballot
if we
harvesting.
Don't ballot harvesting. Yeah. And I think our side's pretty honest. They don't want to do that.
Yeah.
We can't break laws. I don't condone law breaking, but we need to get rid of mail-in ballots. And that's why our case is coming up later this month, September 21st and 25th, where we're going to try to get access to those envelopes to show people these aren't even legitimate ballots. They have no signatures at all, which means they shouldn't be counted. Or they have a chicken scratch that doesn't even match the voter record.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that everybody wants convenience, but I talk to voters all over this country.
Yeah.
Independent, even Democrat voters, they don't want convenience over security and honesty.
For sure, yeah. One last, it's a similar quote, but you say on page 103, the deep state conspired with the media to keep up the fear of COVID in an attempt to oust Donald Trump from the White House and get, well, I guess that's the quote I gave to you. I guess what I was going to ask you is, given what we know about where that virus started, it was in the Wuhan lab, and then it moved across the world. And obviously COVID is real and it did hurt a lot of people. People died from it, mostly elderly and mostly those that had a prior condition of something. But would you go so far as to say, you say they used it, but did it come along and they grabbed hold of it and used it? Or do you feel like it even goes back to the genesis of it to where, I mean, the CCP there's communists in China and we know there's communists here in the United States. Is it possible that they could have unleashed the virus to try to take down Donald Trump and then gain more control, as you were saying, too?
Create a pandemic, shut the world down. We know that this was a manipulated virus. I mean, that's a bioweapon. It's a manipulated virus.
So you believe it's a bioweapon?
Well, when you manipulate a virus and release it from the Wuhan lab, I do believe that. I think Anthony Fauci, literally, that man has blood on his hands. And he needs to be We've got to get very serious in D.C. and start going after some of these people, because what they did is a crime against humanity. And to have him walking around scot-free right now is outrageous. And this is why I'm excited about, we're getting Congress back in. It sounds like they're going to start an impeachment inquiry on Joe Biden. And I think they need to get very serious and sit Anthony Fauci down in the hot seat, and then get very serious about digging into everything about COVID, why they were trying to keep cures from the people, cures that work, why they were trying to force dangerous bio, big pharma treatments on people that were known to actually cause harm. Why? We have a lot of questions that need to be answered. And then, once they're answered, we need to start really seeking justice for the crimes committed on the people. Yeah. World's suffering right now. I walk through airports. I like to try to look people in the eye as I walk past them. I see a lot of pain in people. And I see pain, and I don't even take the politics out of it. We're suffering right now as a people. And we need to come together and right these wrongs. And I believe that in the next year, we have a real opportunity, as I call myself an America First Republican, an America First Conservative. We have a real opportunity to bring along some disaffected Democrats who are looking at the world as it's, as things have happened the last couple of years. Maybe they voted for Joe Biden. They most likely did. But they're realizing now that the Democrat Party is not the Democrat Party of yesteryear, mm-hmm. the one that we think of JFK, that Democrat Party, the one that cared about working class people.
Yeah.
This one doesn't. Mm-hmm. This one doesn't care about working class. This one cares about corporate. This one cares the corporations. This one cares just about pushing really bad indoctrination on our children.
Yeah.
We're seeing how they don't know how to handle the economy. Joe Biden's destroying the economy. And I think a lot of this is by design, a wide open border. If you're a Democrat, you don't want that border to be wide open. You don't want the cartels in your cities and communities like we have them in Arizona. And frankly, here, I'm sure the cartels have the border crisis has even affected Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Nobody should want fentanyl to get into the hands of their children. I've talked to many, many parents who lost a loved one, a child who took a half a pill laced with fentanyl, and their 19-year-old son or daughter is gone. I don't think a Democrat wants their children to get their hands on those kind of drugs. So we have a lot in common to fight for, but we have to start putting America first, and I think that's something even Democrats can get behind. And my policies, I lay them out in this book. The media likes to say I'm extreme. The only thing that's extreme about me is I'm extremely worried about our future. But I don't think one policy in my book, I laid out where I stand on all the issues, not one is extreme. It's all common sense, and it's all solutions to the problems, the very real problems we're facing.
The book is Unafraid, came out just this summer, so it's a great read. I'd recommend it.
And I put pictures in there, too.
And there's beautiful pictures in there of a lot of people, yeah.
I tried to put pictures in because I like it when I'm hearing a story and then to kind of look and go, oh, that's what she was talking about. Now I see. So it shows this incredible movement that we've started in Arizona. When they rigged our election, sabotaged Election Day, and thought they would make me go away, they actually created an even bigger movement. Because this is nationwide now. This is the mama bear standing up and going, no, 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 you're not going to mess with our kids. And they say in nature, the most dangerous place in all of nature is between a mother bear and her baby cubs. And these maniacs have found themselves right there. Mm-hmm. These corrupt individuals have placed themselves between us moms and our children. And we will tear them to shreds. We're not going to let them go after our kids. And it's not just me. There are millions of mama bears around the country who are now activated and politically involved. When you get the moms politically involved, and you get these America First mama bears, they don't stand a chance. So that's why I have great hope that this next year is going to be difficult, a little bit rocky, but I know that we're coming together as a country and we're going to save this republic.
General Flynn, when he was here, I think it was in this program and across the campus, he spoke with our students and he talked about the strength and character of the mothers and how important that is to the health of the nation as well. He also, by the way, he talked about the governors of the United States. Mm-hmm. He was talking about election integrity and how that all 50 governors, in his estimation, haven't fought hard enough for it. Do you feel like that was why they went after you the most? Because you would have come in there and probably fixed what was wrong
Absolutely.
With Maricopa County?
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't be bought, I couldn't be bribed, I couldn't be controlled, and my number one platform issue was securing the border, using the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3, to take it on ourselves as a state, a sovereign state, to secure our border, because we've got an invasion. And I said on day one, is the minute my hand comes off the Bible, I take the oath of office, we declare an invasion, and we get busy securing that border. We know how to do it. We don't have to be damsels in distress waiting for Joe Biden to do it. He's not going to help. He opened it up. Mm-hmm. And when the government is failing to protect our border, they're failing us in the guarantee clause, the states have the right when there's an invasion to protect their citizens. And so they looked at me, the swamp, and said, oh boy, we got trouble on our hands. She's going to shut down the border in Arizona. She's going to show how it's done. And they were very afraid of that. And I also believe they were intimidated by many of my policies that were actually going to put them to shame, these career politicians who've done nothing.
What were you prepared to do with the election integrity?
Day one, call a special session mm-hmm. of the legislature and say, get me every bill you can think of to my desk to secure our elections. Let's have an election day. Let's have an honest election so that every Democrat, every independent, and every Republican goes to bed on election night. They know their vote counted, and they know they can trust the results.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of Republicans who don't want that, which
I
is
know.
Sad.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize Maricopa County, you know, first of all, my opponent, Katie Hobbs, was the Secretary of State, so she got to choose the voting machine. She actually had a hand in running the elections, the person I'm running against.
Right.
But the people in Maricopa County who ran the elections, I wish I could sit here and say they were Democrats. They were actually Republicans. And the men who ran our elections, the Republican men who ran them, they actually, before the election, started a super PAC raising tens of thousands of dollars to defeat election deniers. And we found out that all the expenditures of their super PAC went to trying to defeat one, me.
Right.
And so the guys running our elections in control of the ballot, I'm at the top of the ballot, they're in control of the ballot, are trying to defeat me with the super PAC. There's so many unethical, corrupt individuals in our politics. We've got to get them out. And, you know, we need to run for office. Moms and dads need to get busy and run for office. We need real citizens.
In what world is the person who's running for governor also overseeing the election itself? In Arizona world, that's right.
And I called for her to be recused, you know, right away from the beginning. And I tried to get my Republican opponents who were also running to jump in with me and say, we got to fight this. And they really just sat on the sidelines.
Barack Obama came out and campaigned for her.
She
campaigned in the basement, just like Joe Biden did. And I think we have clip three. Play that for us, Sam.
Here in Arizona, there's no question that Katie Hobbs' opponent, she's good in front of the camera because she's been doing it for a long time. Right? So some people don't know this, but apparently Carrie Lake actually interviewed me back in 2016 when I was president. She was a local news anchor. Yes, at the time, I don't remember thinking that she was the kind of person who would push debunked COVID remedies or promise to issue a declaration of invasion at our border or claim without any evidence that the 2020 election was stolen. I guess that stuff came later because she found it convenient, because she thought, well, here's an opportunity to get attention.
So
oh boy,
that
guy, you know, Obama needs to really go down to the border. We have a mess in Arizona. I mean, that he's appalled that we want, as a state, to protect our citizens. And he calls, declaring an invasion on the border. There's an invasion on the border. We've got a serious invasion on the border. And it's being aided by terrible Democrat policies of a very, very corrupt individual named Joe Biden. And I almost have my blood boiling right now watching that clip, pushing debunked COVID. What was the word he used? Debunked COVID cures. Now, I don't know. I know that I've seen the science on it. Ivermectin is actually very effective. Hydroxychloroquine is effective. It's more effective than apparently these vaccines, which we're actually seeing people just drop dead. They haven't been vetted. The vaccines had not been vetted,
yeah.
And they were forced on the people. That is somebody who's so out of touch.
Yeah.
And he looked nervous to me, if you ask me. He looked very nervous.
There was one moment of levity. Play number four.
Okay.
as Governor Katie's opponent, is going to be focused on making Donald Trump happy. Katie, she may not be flashy. She could have been. She just chooses not to be.
So he says about you that you're good in front of the camera, and then he says about the one he's endorsing, she may not be flashy. It doesn't seem like a ringing endorsement.
It was funny when I saw that. It was toward the end of the campaign that he came out, and I guess that's campaigning for Katie Hobbs. It sure didn't sound like it to me. I kind of joke in the book, after seeing that, I thought he almost seemed to be endorsing me. He was campaigning for me. She looks good. She sounds good. She wants to secure the border. She wants to talk about COVID cures.
And then
Hobbs, she's not very flashy. So that was funny. And then Eric Holder came out. I mean, these are people, I wouldn't be caught dead with Eric Holder. These are the guys that were behind the Fast and Furious gun running operation, which was putting guns in the hands of the cartels, and which resulted in the death of a Border Patrol agent named Brian Terry. And so I wouldn't be seen anywhere with these people. And she brought them out. And then I got real nervous about a week later when someone told me that Hillary Clinton had started talking about me.
Wow.
I said, I just want everyone to know I'm not suicidal. The brakes on my car work. I'm in perfect health. I kind of joked about it, but there was a little bit of truth there, too.
Let's just, you spend a lot of time. I'm going to have to skip over the election integrity, but we have kind of touched on that to some degree. I wanted to, as far as your future, I mean, there's chatter that maybe she'll run for senator, and if Donald Trump wins, you'll be part of his administration. This was funny to me as well. It was from over the weekend when Donald Trump went to, I think it was Friday night, he went to South Dakota, and Kristi Noem endorsed him.
Yes.
And they had a big rally there and so on. And then this was CNN's coverage of that event, clip
okay.
two.
Jake Traylor and I were just asking some folks here waiting outside of this event here this evening in South Dakota who they wanted to be VP. And we came in with the assumption that they would want their governor, Kristi Noem, to be the VP pick. We expect her to endorse Donald Trump here later tonight. But interestingly, just one out of the first 10 people we talked to said Kristi Noem and even had some criticisms. One guy questioned whether she would be a loyal servant to Donald Trump. Seven people, though, they brought up the name without any prompting. Carrie Lake.
Wow.
This is a Republican Party that has changed over the last 10 years, Chuck. Carrie Lake is somebody who lost the bid for governor in Arizona, is mulling whether to run for the U.S. Senate in Arizona, and yet despite the election denialism, despite her own loss in Arizona, named by 7 out of 10 people, the very first 10 we talked to, unprompted here.
Wow.
It's a small sampling, but that's CNN.
I'm surprised that Vaughn, that reporter, he was not very fair when he covered me that he put that out. You know, that's actually really flattering. And I think what it says is that the people are looking for fighters. Donald Trump's a fighter. I'm a fighter. There's a lot of fighters out there. We have surrendered so many hills, and that's why we have found ourselves as an America that's faltering and on the verge of really collapse. And so the people want someone who's going to stand up and fight. And fight for, they are really fed up when they hear these Republicans or Democrats say, we got to move on from the 2020 election, there was no fraud, all that stuff. They know what they saw with their own eyes, and they're thrilled and ecstatic that I'm standing up and fighting in court. The arena to go to battle on these elections, unfortunately, is in the court system. So I'm fighting in court, and they appreciate that because they know that if their vote is not protected, if the sanctity and sacredness of their vote is not protected, then we don't have a country. So they appreciate that. It's very, very early to even be discussing that. But what I love, though, when the fake news starts asking about President Trump's VP, is that they're subtly acknowledging that he's going to be the nominee, that he's going to be the president. And so I know that whoever he picks, you know, a year from now when he decides who is going to be his VP, he'll look at the playing field, he'll figure out what does he need, who can help him, and he'll pick somebody. But he's such a strong man. He's such a strong leader. If there was ever anybody who didn't even need a VP, it would be President Trump. I hope he picks somebody who is incredibly loyal, because I know being in politics, you have someone stab you in the back.
Right.
You don't want people who aren't with you in your policy and your agenda on your inner circle. You want people who are fully America first. We've seen too much of the backstabbing already.
Yeah.
I hope he picks somebody that the media fears. I hope he picks somebody that will continue the MAGA movement. I don't want and I talk about moving forward in this book. I can't remember what chapter. It might be chapter 11. I don't want to see the America First movement end after President Trump's term. I can't wait for his next term. He's going to accomplish so much. We're going to get back on track. His Agenda 47 is the most transformative political agenda I've ever seen. And I know, because we know how effective he was the first go around, he's going to be even more effective this time. But we can't let it end with President Trump. We have to have this Make America Great Again, Save America, America First agenda continue on for our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. This has to be the way of American politics from here on out.
Kerry Lake, thank you so much for joining us today on the Trumpet Daily.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you for having me, and the warm welcome I received today. It warmed my heart. I'll never forget that. Thank you.
You are watching the Trumpet Daily. This is Stephen Fleury. My special guest today was Kerry Lake. We're so grateful that she was able to join us. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can reach us via email, td@thetrumpet.com. I believe Ms. Lake's Twitter handle is @KerryLake. Mine is @StephenFleury. So you can join us on the conversation on Twitter as well. Don't forget about our Rumble channel @The Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.